This call is from a correctional institution and is subject to monitoring and recording. If you do not wish to accept this call, please hang up now. To accept the call, press 0.
To deny it,
thank you for using
Callus.
Go ahead with your call.
Hello there.
Hey, man. How's
Trey.
It going, bro?
Oh, not too bad, man.
What's that?
Not too bad. How are you doing today?
Right on. I'm doing pretty okay, all considered. It's been a not much as much has happened yet, which is good.
Yeah.
This is I'm on a 3-group rotation, and so this is the first time out of my cell today. So you know, it's been fairly quiet so far. So I'm doing all right.
Yeah.
And as always, Matt, I appreciate you. You following my my case and offering continued support, and I CC'd you that that response I wrote to the Guelph, and
yeah.
I heard that they just phoned yesterday as part of their procedure, I guess, is receiving a letter to the editor. They require name and phone number and address, so I gave a friend's phone number that they said were comfortable with me using, and they, sure enough, yesterday they phoned and asked if I did in fact write that piece.
Yeah.
So we'll see if
right
they
on.
Sent it.
Well, before we get too much into that, you're on the air right now, and maybe do you want to begin with an introduction? Maybe for all those who don't know you, or maybe who think they know you through something about you based on the mainstream media reports.
Yeah.
Do you want to give us or tell us a bit about who you are and how you came to be fighting your extradition to the U.S.? It's a big question,
well,
I know.
Again,
hope you don't mind going through the introduction.
Say again?
Hope you don't mind going through the introduction.
Absolutely.
I know you've said it before.
No, I think it's necessary and important, and I appreciate you, directing me. And I would like to thank you and all the folks there, all the potential listeners in Guelph. My name is Trey Arrow. I'm calling live from VIRCC, which is in British Columbia, Victoria. It's Vancouver Island Regional Correctional Center, and in under 2 weeks I will be marking 2 years of incarceration. On March 13th, 2004, I was arrested here in Victoria, and basically I was arrested and have been held ever since because I have warrants for my arrest, and I have indictments in the U.S. that are stemming from arsons, logging trucks that burned and cement and gravel trucks that burned back in 2001. And I have declared my innocence to these charges, despite what, like you mentioned, and we talked about at the beginning there for those that might be listening, despite what the mainstream media has circulated, and more intently the U.S. government, the FBI, has circulated around my name. They have attempted to attach me to the ELF, and they have the Earth Liberation Front. They've also tried to label me as a terrorist, an eco-terrorist, even though the charges that I'm charged with are not even terrorist crimes. They're strictly arson related, this case is multifaceted. There's a lot of dimensions to it. I basically am not only declaring my innocence, but am protesting this incarceration and this politically motivated prosecution and extradition. I have been involved in very effective environmental activism for over a decade. I've been involved in animal, non-human animal issues, environmental issues, human issues, and I've been able to receive a bit of notoriety and international attention. And one particular action that I engaged in, it was back in the summer of 2000. I ended up living on a 9-inch ledge in downtown Portland for 11 days outside the third story of the U.S. Forest Service building, protesting the sale of Eagle Creek, a very contentious and very sacred ancient forest with old growth trees, with endangered species, and with a watershed that served hundreds of thousands of Oregonians. And during this ledge sit, I lived on this 9-inch ledge for 11 days. Up above the sidewalk and the streets right in downtown Portland. And And it caught international attention, and it received amazing support. It was a phenomenal peaceful action, and it was a pivotal factor actually in the cancellation of this sale that was over a decade long struggle. And so in doing so, I made a name for myself, and I also became a very easy and clear target by the powers that be, the authorities, specifically the FBI, to try to silence and stop the voice of dissent, and silence and stop those that challenge the status quo, silence and stop those that stand up and speak the truth and expose some of the injustices perpetrated at the hands of government officials and corporate entities. And so what I am facing now is an exact result of my effective activism, of my my ability to garner public support and to change people's minds and to get people active in a more progressive, conscious, environmentally minded way that challenges government policy, challenges corporate agendas. And these arsons took place, like I said, in 2001. Three people pled guilty to these arsons and received less than 3.5 year sentence. In exchange for this 3.5 year sentence, they were facing a potential 80 years. They implicated me, said that I was the ringleader, the mastermind behind these arsons. And now the charges that the FBI has brought against me, if I'm found guilty, the minimum sentencing is life. There's no eligibility for parole. There's no like maximum life, but minimum 10 years. It's minimum life sentencing because, and again, even though these aren't terrorist charges, they're big weapons type charges. And if you look at the statute that I was, the description of the statute that I was charged with, it's violation of U.S. Code 18, and subsection is 924. And if you look at that, which is easy to find on the, you know, if you have a book or even on the website for on the internet, you can access Canadian code and U.S. code. And it's a big weapons type charges, like the things that they use as that they describe as destructive devices are like missiles and bombs and grenades and so forth. Now what they're alleging that I used, which these people used to destroy these logging trucks and cement and gravel trucks, was a milk jug filled with gasoline with a time device consisting of incense and matches. And they're alleging that this is a destructive device analogous to, again, a missile, a bomb, or a grenade. So it's quite, in my opinion, outrageous. It's quite unjust, and it's quite disconcerting what I'm facing, what I have been going through now for more than 2 years. I was on the run in Canada for almost 2 years before I was arrested. So this is nothing that is, recent. This is something that's been going on for a while, and it's definitely very intense. A little bit as far as an up-to-date picture legally, I was committed for extradition. I went through 3 days of hearings last June with my lawyer and, opposing the extradition, presenting to the judge there at the Supreme Court of NBC about my case, the arguments that we felt were very clear and very strong as to oppose the extradition, the blatant persecution and targeting of me by the FBI, by the U.S. government, and that and some of the basis for our arguments were that I'm being persecuted for my political opinion, my political belief, my political stance, and that is protected under the Charter of Rights and Freedoms, and it's supposed to be one reason why one is not extradited. Part of our claim is that the sentencing, the difference in sentencing between the U.S. Punishment and the Canadian punishment is grossly out of proportion. And if I was convicted of these crimes in Canada, I'd be looking at possibly a few years. I'd probably, by the time of that, get time served as I'm sitting right now. And as opposed to the States, I'm looking at the rest of my life in prison. So we presented these arguments. I felt that my lawyer Tim did a pretty stellar job. However, given the bureaucracy and the matters at hand. And when I say matters at hand, I mean the implications of you know, of what it would mean to Canada if they would refuse my extradition to the U.S., which is their big brother, and they bend over backwards basically to anything that the U.S. wants. You know, the Magistrate Gill, who oversaw the proceedings, decided to commit me for extradition. So that began the appeal process. We just finished the initial part of the appeal process about a month ago, and that was putting together all our submissions to the Minister of Justice, who at the time was Erwin Kotler, but now because of the new federal election, it is we have, as you folks probably know, we have the Conservatives now as the minority government. A new Minister of Justice was elected into his seat as an MP, and now a new one has been appointed to the cabinet. And his name is Vic, and I believe he's pronounced it Taves. I could be mistaken, but I believe it's T-O-E-W-S, pronounced Taves. Anyway, so he's the new Minister of Justice. Even though the hands have, even though the office has switched hands in the middle of my extradition appeal submissions, he will still be considering it, not the previous Erwin Kotler. All the letters that folks wrote on my behalf, thank you to anyone out there that may have done so. There's many people around the world that have sent letters to the Minister of Justice on my behalf, you know, calling for justice, calling for my, you know, my freedom and my release and my ability to be able to stay in Canada as a refugee, as a citizen, and to, you know, urging the Minister of Justice to oppose my extradition. All of those letters are in. All of my affidavit, which I hear you and I can talk about another time. I hear that Morgan sent you a copy of. I put together over 18,000 words of my own version of what has happened, what is going on, and my reasons why the minister should oppose my extradition. And then on top of that, it was a very lengthy document by my lawyer, all on recycled paper, by the way. I was able to really convince him of the importance and the merit of putting things on post-consumer recycled paper. So I'm glad that he embraced that. And on a side note, things that he prints out for me that aren't like super professionally required is all like on scrap paper. So it's even better than buying post-consumer. And so all of his submissions are in, all of the submissions from Tim. Basically outlining some of the things that we presented to Magistrate Gill, but also some other things as well, like, for example, my diet, the fact that I eat only a vegan raw, exclusively a vegan raw diet, and that it has been next impossible, or was next impossible initially, to get even the North Fraser Pretrial Center, where I was held for over a year in Vancouver, to get... It was next impossible to get them to honor my diet. It will be next impossible, if not impossible, to get the Bureau of Prisons in the U.S. to honor my raw vegan diet. And again, some of the same things, that this is a politically motivated prosecution and execution, and I should not be extradited because the U.S. is targeting me, not because I'm guilty, not because I'm involved with the ELF, not because I'm guilty of arson, but because I have chosen to challenge the status quo, take a stand against the against the corporations in the government that put power and profit and property above the protection of our planet and the people and all of the wildlife. And I feel that is what is happening in our culture, what is happening in the Western world, is an atrocity. You know, that the sacredness of life is put at less of a regard than corporate profit. And I have chosen to take a stand about that. I have chosen to, you know, be a voice for those trees and the wildlife and non-human animals and even humans as well. I've done a lot of work with Food Not Bombs and homeless and poverty issues, and taken a stand and tried to be a voice for those voices that are commonly not heard and overlooked and overpowered. And in doing so, I've been effective in doing so.